KUT Radio. Radio. So what?
The XXXXXXX Files. Exploring feminism and technology through space and time. Good morning. You are listening to the XX Files on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is 11:34 on Wednesday, November 22nd, and we are live in the studio. It's Jules Ghoul. We've got a very special guest with us today, Suzanne Kite, aka Kite. So Kite, aka Suzanne Kite, is a Oglala Lakota performance artist, visual artist, and composer raised in Southern California. She holds a BFA from Cal Arts in music composition, an MFA from Bard's College's Milton Avery Graduate School, and is currently a PhD candidate at Concordia University. Her research is concerned with contemporary Lakota mythologies and epistemologies, and investigates the multiplicity of mythologies existing constantly in the contemporary storytelling of the Lakota, explored through research creation, computational media, and performance practice. Recently, Kite has been developing a body interface for movement performances, carbon fiber structures, immersive video and sound installations, as well as co-running the experimental electronic imprint Unheard Records. Whoa, Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you.
You are so busy.
Too busy.
No kidding. So can you maybe first tell us how you found your way to Montreal?
Yeah, I was finishing up my MFA in New York and living in Los Angeles. And I, I was invited to, explore if I even wanted to do a PhD at Concordia by Jason Lewis over in the ABTEC Initiative for Indigenous Futures Lab. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought of it before, but I was like, oh, why not?
Why not do a PhD, right?
Why not?
Do you see any, benefits or limitations of, expanding your practice within the institution?
Right now, all I see are benefits because it was pretty hard in L.A., and right now it's much easier to, have time to think and work and stuff.
Amazing. Cool. So your most recent work is a multimedia performance entitled Everything I Say Is True, and it explores Lakota mythology, epistemologies, and mapping. Can you start by telling us a little bit about this work and describe for us what is the reasonable truth which you explore in this practice?
Responsible truth.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, this work, it was commissioned by the Walter Phillips Gallery in Banff, and it was curated by Jacqueline Bell. And at the time, I had a lot of questions about where my knowledge comes from as a diasporic Lakota person, because I was born in California and my the Oglala Lakota live in South Dakota. So there's a lot to that piece, and it's about conspiracy and mystery and lies and miscommunication and magic. But the one thing that I wanted to explore was this thing called responsible truth, and that's a phrase that I've adopted from Lee Hester and Jim Cheney's paper. It's called Truth in Native American Epistemology. Amazing paper, everyone should read it, where they suggest that one of the main differences between Indian ceremonial worlds and Western ceremonial worlds is the intention of these to be responsibly true, not just true or false, but responsibly true. And for example, it's hard to explain responsible truth, but to me, it's if you listen to how the famous Lakota orator, Black Elk, explains how the Oglala people received their sacred white buffalo calf woman, Black Elk said, this they tell, and whether it happened so or not, I do not know. But if you think about it, you can see that it is true. So it's, if you think about it, you can see that it is true. So I interpret this as when something must be true for the community, ethically it must be true, then this Western concept of truth is not the exact same as in English as it is in Lakota. But, you know, this flexibility with truth obviously is dangerous and complex verbal territory these days.
No kidding. Because, yeah, it's like, I mean, epistemology, how do you know what you know? How did you get to knowing what you know? Mm-hmm. What is truth, right? Like, is it what scientists tell us? Is it like something that you feel inside you?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So this is obviously like a really big question. It takes a lot of exploring. Also, your body is implicated in the creation of this particular artwork in a number of ways. So can you describe for us a little bit your body interface with it, which is this interactive wearable technology, as well as how this interface was created?
Yeah, so currently this body interface, it's my musical instrument. It's very simple. It's basically an Arduino hardware, force-sensitive resistors, accelerometer, and a radio transmitter so it can communicate with the computer. And right now it's like a sculpture and that's housed in like a fiberglass thing that I wear. Yeah. And so with this instrument, I wanted to explore mapping of my body, of territory, with MIDI and sound. When I was at CalArts, I was composing music with sonification, but I was like, something's missing. Ethics is missing, politics is missing. And so the body was the thing that was missing. My body is the thing that listens. So, and then soon after that, I was reconnected with my grandfather and he was telling me how he hears songs. I was like, how do you hear things you've never heard before? Which I was asking how he composes, as a ceremonial singer. And he pointed to his vocal cords. So I interpret that as he hears music while singing. The action of hearing and singing, remembering, improvising, channeling, they're all one thing at once. So I was like, I need the body involved in the conversation with my data, you know?
Okay, amazing. So how does it work?
So basically, it's a microcontroller. It's got my body moves and the electronics know, the accelerometer knows that I've moved in a certain direction, just like the iPhone has an accelerometer. And that produces numbers. And then I have a patch that takes those numbers and turns them into MIDI notes. So basically, it could just play the piano, just like a MIDI keyboard. But I can tell it to control video, to control sound, and I can complicate those relationships with computer programming.
Amazing. And how does it feel? To be your own, like, MIDI controller.
It feels crazy. It's really intense because it depends on what I tell it to do. But you know, it can like really amplify. If I'm on stage or in a gallery and I say like, I feel old and decrepit and like I'm being crushed by the weight of something, I make my body feel that and I imagine I go there, then the sound can go there with me. And it's awesome to have that relationship or be able to listen to myself. It's like all a practice in being it. Can I hear myself? Can I hear myself when I speak, sort of thing.
And is it like fairly accurate?
Yeah, I actually like it when it's less accurate. When the computer complicates or confuses me. Like one time I had it set up so as I turned my body towards speakers, I had four speakers around me in a room. I wanted to point my face towards or my body towards the sound. I wanted to like turn towards the speaker that I was making, but every time I turned, it would flip around the room really fast. So I was always like losing control of where the sound was, and that was cool.
Oh my gosh, no kidding. Okay, I'm gonna put on just a excerpt from your performance. Everything I say is true, and we're just gonna like get a little bit of an idea of what this body interface sounds like.
Thank you.
so beautiful. So we're listening to an excerpt of the sound from one of Suzanne's performances, Everything I Say Is True. And she was just talking about how the way that she interacts with the sound, the way that that's magical, and it's kind of acts like a magic trick. So I kind of want to talk a little bit more about magic, how that fits into your practice, and also what is kind of created at the intersection of the body, particularly the indigenous female body, and technology, and if perhaps that's magic too.
Yeah, well, I guess just about this, and I just want to say, since we're listening to her voice, we've got in the background is Jessica Kenny, who's an amazing vocalist, and there's a lot of instrumentalists involved in that, in this tiny bit of sound that we're listening to in the background, but and their magic. So magic, I really like magic tricks, and I really like how we choose for things to be magical when they need to be, and that's kind of where responsible truth constantly comes in and out. And I picked magic because there's like a mutual decision made to experience a performance by the audience and the performer. And so if I'm on stage and I do something, I do like a magic trick with my interface, like I make the sound move around the room, or I cue something and you can't see how I'm doing it, but you know that I'm controlling it. I could be controlling it live. I could have an assistant. It could be planned perfectly. But you know, that's up to, and there's something, and I don't want to go too far into this, there's something about when we want Indians to be magical or Native people to be magical, when they're human beings, and it's and epistemology is complex, and that experience is complex, but it's fun to make yourself into the magic person that people want you to be. So but to speak to your thing about the intersection of the body and the indigenous female body, I guess there's a need to, like, I guess I'll borrow this language from Jason Lewis from the Aboriginal Territories in Cyberspace. And he said that we need to build capacity for technology in our indigenous communities. And this capacity, I think, needs to happen for Indigenous people, and especially Indigenous women, because we are empowered by knowing the tools that shape our worlds. You know, they're like epistemological protocols that if we decide how the technology is made, like my technology, my instruments, it's like a violin, except when I play my violin, I didn't make that from scratch, and I don't control how that is constructed. So if I can make my instrument and construct the knowledges, then I can decide what knowledge is being created. If that makes sense.
Totally. Okay, so you really like find it to be a super powerful thing to make your own instrument.
Definitely. It's not too hard. Everyone should do it.
I made a small synthesizer one time, but my solders were not very good, so it fell apart eventually, but...
I'm pretty bad at soldering.
But I mean, you must have done some soldering to make this.
Oh, I get a lot of help. Yeah, one thing I've learned about making instruments and making tech and putting on excessively technological things is you have to have help, and a lot of people help me, which I'm really grateful for.
Amazing. So also kind of speaking about how does this kind of magic that is created, how does this kind of rub up against the idea of responsible truth? So like how do you see them working together, the magic and the truth?
Yeah, I do see them working together, and I see examples of responsible truth in like my most precious experiences as a Lakota person, you know, when I'm with my grandfather and he says, you know, do you hear something? Do you hear this thing that could be construed as magic, but it has to be true for me because I need that experience to be real. And I feel that the same in performance, because I think the audience trusts you to make something real for them that or show them something outside what they're used to, something elsewhere, something in between. And I want, and art can do that. And I want to explore those places and show people.
So you work with kind of, so like narrative, epistemology, mapping, but kind of all centered around your body. Can you maybe talk about how you feel like your body is kind of directly implicated in like in this exploration of narrative, of epistemology, of mapping, kind of?
Yeah, so part of my experience as an Indigenous person, it's complicated. I was adopted. My biological mother was adopted, and you know, when she passed away, I had to reckon with who I was. And you know, I was finally had the ability to have a connection to what I see as like the Lakota traditional territory. But that place it's more complicated than that. Like, I don't have land there, that it wasn't passed down to me. And then when I look at that space, it's a territory, it's mappable and it's experienceable. But you know, knowing where your family is buried, like I know there's a hill where she's buried, and that changes the entire territory for me. It changes the map, and I feel that like that place is part of my body. And when I'm there and I'm experiencing it, like in order to have knowledge of the world, you have to have a body that exists in it and is, you know, consuming it and interacting with it and in relationship with it. So, you know, as an Indigenous female with a body, and you know, I needed to implicate it and needed to make sure that it's hard for me. Like I've been asked by people, like, can I perform my pieces without me in them? Can I have someone else perform them for me? And I don't know if it's possible. It's, I feel like even in small pieces I create, like I did this sonar piece where you approach a sculpture of this place in Kyle, South Dakota. You approach the sculpture and suddenly, you know, the music starts going crazy. It, you know, rises and falls, because I want other people to experience what I'm feeling. But my body has to be involved.
You have to be there kind of all of the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, there is this way that I think we often tend not to implicate ourselves in things like the land, epistemology, mapping, you know, or even narrative, you know, like I think there's a real, like Western kind of, like this, like colonial idea of that, you know, like the narrative has happened. The story has been told. We accept it. We don't really think about how we are implicated in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is that's really interesting and necessary to kind of be like, everybody should be a little bit more implicated in the spaces that they occupy and in the stories that they're telling or that they're listening to, or, you know, if you're believing them or not. I also, you're also interested in, exploring the abandonment of linear time. So how does this work in your performances and in your art? And how do you kind of begin to deconstruct or rearrange these ideas of linear space and time?
Yeah, I feel like what you were just speaking to about, like a known narrative, an accepted narrative, I feel like that is all involved in this idea of linear time. And it's complex. And I guess, first of all, there's like, I see this potency in using giant sexy concepts like time when talking about anything as an Indigenous person. People listen closely, but I guess I'm not a physicist or an elder, and I have a lot of listening myself to do, but I need to listen to my elders before I can really know what is the truth, the responsible truth. But the thing about a linear time, which I feel like is built, especially in the United States, there's this, I felt an overwhelming amount of reliance on this concept of manifest destiny, like it is how it is, and that's how it's going to be forever. You know, but manifest destiny relies on, you know, a beginning point and an end point in order to achieve that. So I feel like in order for us to reorient, we must reorient our view of land. We have to stop thinking about land from an aerial view, because if we do it like that, we're doomed to think of it as ownable, as something to take from. And then we're disassociated from this reality that we do live here. We live on the ground. And secondly, I think that our indigenous languages can help save us from being trapped in ways of knowing that have driven us to basically the edge of apocalypse. Because in Lakota language, tense and time are expressed very differently. And I have a suspicion that when the past and present are thought of as closer together, we know that past events do not leave us. And most importantly, if we can be less linear in our heads, and think of things as more circular, as time is surrounding us and space as a part of us, then maybe we can start to begin to imagine places like elsewhere and in between.
Oh, amazing. So just, yeah, again, to like implicate yourself, think of like, it's like, it's so hard, but circular, I think, is a really like, really helpful kind of notion of thinking about time. And then I think like, people work really well with shapes. So it's like, okay, a line, but like, no, maybe it's a circle, and yeah, like, maybe it's around you, kind of.
Enmeshed, like to think of yourself as enmeshed in something and not on a speeding train headed towards the same thing, no matter what we do. It's not, I don't think it's like that.
Right. And this is we live in a kind of neoliberal society that really wants everything to be kind of on a straight line. So what do you think is to be gained through thinking about space and time in a different rearrangement?
I think we can gain the ability to imagine ourselves elsewhere, reimagine our bodies in relationship to things, and hopefully see the earth as not something we can just take from forever and not have any responsibility to ourselves and other communities. And you know, one thing to be, you know, clear is that if we just say that we're on this timeline of this linear timeline that we can't control or go back on, then we need to accept that history is still with us and constantly affects us. And you know, the events that happened in my past, that, you know, multiple generations in the past, they mean, their interconnections mean that I'm here now, just like the history of the entire continent, the entire world. There's many interacting parts to time that create now. And if we know that they're happening right now in this moment, then we know we have the ability to change the future.
I love that. Unfortunately, on the radio, we do have to conform to some time. So we have only a very little bit of it left. And I wonder if you could just talk, next week you're headed to Winnipeg, my hometown, for the 3rd annual symposium on the future imaginary. What does the future imaginary mean to you, and how are you gonna work with this in Winnipeg? How do you apply this to your work?
So I'm very excited for Winnipeg. I'm there to listen and learn, and there's going to be some amazing talks, and I really encourage people to look up the lineup and, you know, check out those people. So the Initiative for Indigenous Futures is an amazing group of people who are a network all over Canada. And so to me, the future imaginary is one where I exist, first of all. Like, I hope I exist in the future and that people like me exist in the future. And I really hope that other Indigenous people exist, because I think we're really necessary. Currently, I'm a docent in the Leonard and Bina Ellen Gallery at Concordia, where I get to talk about the Aboriginal territories in cyberspace and help people play games and explore the worlds we have there. And, you know, being in that gallery tells me that not only do other Indigenous people who work with technology exist, but they're flourishing. I didn't know that until recently. So I believe very much in now, but I do agree that if we engage with technology, we can help create the future.
Amazing. I really hope that you're creating the future. cool. This has been an interview with Suzanne Kite on the XXFiles CKUT 90.3 FM. It is noon on Wednesday, November 22nd. Thank you so much, Suzanne. That was really, really fun and interesting.
Thanks for having me.
And have a great time in Winnipeg.
Oh, yes, I will.
Okay. Have a good afternoon.
The COVID-19 pandemic in Canada is serious. We must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at canada.ca/coronavirus or 1-833-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
When your parents need your help, you're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Sociale 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Plus que jamais, la santé de tous est entre nos mains. Sur mon cellulaire, l'application Alerte COVID m'avise si j'ai été en contact avec une personne déclarée positive récemment. Du bout des doigts et dans le respect de ma vie privée, je peux protéger ma santé et celle de mes proches simplement en téléchargeant l'application Alerte COVID. Rendez-vous dès maintenant sur québec.ca/alerte-covid pour obtenir plus...